Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, good morning. Well, it's good afternoon. I don't know why I want to always say morning. Good afternoon. Good afternoon. This is Apostle Crystal Lee. You are here for Torah today, and it's the 42nd week. We're dealing with the journeys of the tribes today, and so our theme for today's Torah is Parashat Matat and Maaseh. That's the journeys of the tribe. So come and assemble for the reading and the hearing and the reverencing of Yah through the fellowship around Torah. I believe it's by this bread that we live. This is the way that we live here, not just by the bread that we eat alone, but by the word that comes out of the mouth of God, comes from the mouth of God. So I'm excited to be here with you today. A few changes have been made. We're only doing a 30-minute set here. So I'm going to give you the passages to read today, and you can take the time to read those. Maybe we'll do an overflow on Sundays. I don't know. I have to pray about that and see what the Holy Spirit says to do about that, but we're going to go through the readings. I'm just going to give you some highlights from all of the passages of Torah today. I'm going to give you all of the readings, but I'm only going to give you the highlights from the passages of Torah today. So let's go ahead and jump into what the readings are for today. The passages are as follows: Numbers 30, verses 1 through 32, through Numbers 33, through chapter 36, verse 13. Let me look at that again. Make sure I'm giving it to you right. So we got Numbers 30, starting at verse 1 and going through chapter 32, verse 2. And then we've got Numbers 33. Okay, so this should just say Numbers 30 through 36, ending at verse 13. That's really what it should say. Jeremiah chapter 2, verse 4 through 28, and then 3, the fourth verse. Jeremiah chapter 2. Verses 4 through 28, and then Jeremiah 3, the fourth verse. Then your New Testament readings are going to be Matthew chapter 5, verses 33 through 37, and James chapter 4, verses 1 through 12. So you're going to have to do a whole lot of reading on your own. Usually I'm reading this with you, reading it to you, but I'm going to tell you something. We're going to talk about boundaries a little bit today, and I don't want to get too far off into any rabbit holes because that'll take more time than I need to take today to deal with that. But the reality is the Father setting boundaries in the lives of his people. And one of the boundaries that's absolutely imperative is the boundaries in our relationships and how we relate to one another. And so we'll get into more detail about that in another broadcast. But right now we're at 30 minutes and I'm going to do the highlights and you're going to do the reading on your own time. And if whatever highlights we don't get to today, we'll see if the Holy Spirit has me come back and do that. But the reality is I've been paying for this for quite some time just to make sure that I'm able to bring this to you. And at some point, the reality is that the people of God are to be sustaining these kinds of things. If you want to go to the restaurant and you want to eat food, you don't just look in the menu and order food that you're not going to pay for. You look in the menu and you order based on what you have in your pocket. You know, so if you only got a dollar, you only, you know, get a dollar's worth of fries or whatever it is. You know what I'm saying? So I just wanted to share that with you. If you're interested in partnering with Rock Mogul Ministries and Kingdom Ambassadors Worldwide to make sure that we can bring more of what we bring to you as we have been doing two-hour broadcasts. And again, it's been cut down to 30 minutes. If you want more of this, then you can sow at that place. I believe it's paypal.me/rockmogul is how you can sow into ministry and make sure that we are able to bring you more extensive programs or more extensive broadcasts. I don't like the word programs because we're not, well, this is programming. We are programming you. Your mind should be renewed. It should be reset, but according to the word. So if you'd like more extensive broadcasts and programming, then you're going to have to sow into that. To get that. So let's get down to business today. Father, we thank you for this time that you brought us together. We thank you that it would be efficient and effective. All that you give us to share, all that you give us to say would hit the target today. In the name of the Lord, we declare it is so in Jesus' name. All right, so let's get right to it. Numbers chapter 30. When we look at chapter 30, we're talking about the importance of vows. And this is imperative that we understand the importance of vows. We live in a society where people don't really care about vows. And we read 1 Timothy chapter 3 all of the time as it pertains to that, because there are simply, you can start right there in chapter 3, verse 1, but there are simply people that are called truce breakers. They're people that you cannot even convince to create a covenant. You cannot even convince them to come into proper alignment. You know what I'm saying? They want to do it on their terms, their way, because they want a way out. You know, when I did a lot of studying about the vows and how the vows were set up, you know, we look at the Jewish way of doing things. I'm talking from a Hebrew perspective. I don't really use the word Jew a lot. You'll notice that I don't. And if you need to question that or you have a question about that, you can hit me at kingdomambassadors247@gmail.com, and we can have a more extensive conversation about that. But the reality is, when you look at the laws of today as they have been watered down for Jews, for that culture, which is a totally different culture than what the Hebrews were in, they make all kinds of concessions for why they might be able to get out. You know, they create loopholes for themselves is what I want to say. So they say little phrases inside of a commitment. They say little phrases inside of their commitments that keep them from having to connect and to commit. So if I don't keep this vow, then I'm good, I'm clear, because they understand the importance of a vow. They understand the contempt of a failed commitment. They understand that you can't just make a vow and just say a thing and not mean a thing, because that vow, that commitment is something that we make before God. Any vow that we make it before God. But when we look at chapter 30, it talks about the importance of vows and covenants. And in verse 1, it discusses out of the gate, as Moshe is speaking to the heads of the tribes concerning the children of Israel, there's a conversation going on between him and the leaders of the tribe. And he says to them, this is the thing which Yah hath commanded. I need you to understand that. Yah has commanded this thing. What is a command? That word is tsava, and it means to lay a charge upon, to appoint, to ordain. And we see that actualized in Genesis chapter 2, verse 16, when we see the Father saying to Adam, he says he commanded of them, eat of every tree of the garden, but not to touch the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. That was a command. And commands are not for our, not to keep us away from, not to keep us from having things, but to keep us away from the thing that's not going to be beneficial for us. It's to keep us away from the thing that doesn't profit us. And, of course, he made clear that that tree of the knowledge of good and evil, even though he didn't give all of the details about this tree, he had given them the whole garden and told them you could have at it as much as you want. But that tree there, don't eat of it, because the day that you eat of it, in that day, you will surely die. So he gave him what the consequences of eating of that tree would be. And so we know how that all went down. When we look at some other spots here. Verse 2 talks about the vow itself. So what do we want to talk about of the vow, because of the importance of the vow? This word vow means nadar, and it's to give something to God, to do or to give something to God. Now, why do I say that? Because people actually make vows with one another, but the thing that a lot of people don't recognize and they don't realize is that when you make that vow with one another, you have also made that vow before God. We are made in his likeness and in his image. We are his creation. And so when we deal with one another, there's a certain way that we are to deal. There's a certain way that we are to handle our commitments and our covenants. And so many people are in such big trouble because they have refused to finish and to follow through on their vows. You know, this thing right here puts me in the mindset of why I was so adamant in certain seasons of my life, even though I had misconnected, I had connected in a wrongful connection or covenant and did not really understand all of that part. But what I did understand were the dynamics of covenant. And somebody just prophesied to me the other day, a man of God just hit the nail on the head, on the target the other day. When I get into something, it's hard to get me out, because if I make a covenant, then I'm sold out to that thing. That's what I mean. I said what I meant, and I meant what I said. Now, the problem is with most people in this society that we live in the age that we live in, they don't feel that same way. They are okay with saying things that get them to an end goal. They are okay with saying things that get them to the place where they can achieve or obtain or access whatever it is they're after. But after they've gotten that, then they don't feel the obligation anymore. They don't feel the need to follow through. And that is important. You hearing what I'm saying? Because a vow, again, is not just made between you and a person. It's made before God. Genesis 28 discusses how Jacob vows to Yah when he is in that wilderness experience on his way to his uncle's house. And he begins to declare, if you will get me back to this place safely, if I can come back here having more than what I took out of here, and I can have a way to do for my father what I want to do, then I will make you my God. That was a vow that he made to him. It was a promise to do or to give something to God. The word oath in these passages, we'll look at the word oath, it means shava, and that word means to swear. It means to take on the responsibility of. The other part of that is shevuah, which means to testify. It testifies of the innocence of a person. What does that mean? We go right back to what I just stated. When you make a commitment, and you keep your commitment, you are innocent. You are not at blame. You are not at fault of anything. You have, in the innocency of your commitment, stayed to your covenant. And so there is no fault on your end at all. There is no fault at your end at all to be able to commit or to be able to keep this commitment that you've made. Now, if someone else on the other end breaks that covenant, then they are at fault. They are at guilt. Are you listening to what I'm saying? And this passage begins to talk about if a man vow a vow. I'm going to read a couple of words here. It says, if a man vow a vow unto Yah and swear an oath to bind his soul with a bond. I want you to remember that phrase, bind his soul. He shall not break his word. Do you hear that? He shall not break his word. He shall do according to all that proceedeth out of his mouth. And it goes into, if a woman also vow a vow unto the Lord and bind herself by a bond, being in her father's house in her youth, and if her father hear her vow, it talks about her father hearing her vow and being able to cancel her vow and her being free from her vow. But then in verse 5 it says, but if her husband, if her father disallow her in the day that he heareth not any of her vows or of her bonds wherewith she had bound her soul shall stand. So if he doesn't disallow it when he's heard it before the sun goes down, then she is liable for everything that she said. Now, it also goes down to verse 8, and it says, but if her husband disallowed her on the day, because in verse 6 it starts talking about her husband. So we got two dynamics here for the woman. We've got one dynamic for the man. If the man vows a vow unto Yah, swears an oath to bind his soul, he's got to keep his word. That's a lost art in the world that we live in. Men keeping their word. But it gives the woman an out here, because the woman is supposed to be under a covering. So she's either under the covering of her father or she's under the covering of her husband. And this can be both naturally and spiritually, because a woman that has come out of her father's house and has not necessarily done everything in the order that it should be done in because of ignorance or whatever, we've got spiritual parents, you know, that should be able to handle that kind of thing. We also have a heavenly father who also deals with us accordingly, and I know that he has definitely canceled some of my vows. He's definitely canceled some of my covenants and some of my commitments. So I can say that with certainty that he will cancel. But it talks about the soul being bound. Let's talk about this binding here. That word to bind, or this word bound, means I sear. Bind his soul. That word bind means I sear. We are in Numbers 30 through 36, Elder Vicki, and it's going to be reading that has to be done on everybody's own because we only have 30 minutes, and I'm only into 15 minutes of that now, so I'm just giving an overview. This word bind discusses the binding has to do with a contractual agreement. A contractual agreement. Only two things. This is why I say to you guys all the time, I hear people pray all the time, and I know we've been taught this, but it's an error. It is error to bind the devil. That is error, and I know it's going to take some of us some time to come out of that mindset, because every now and then we slip into that because the religious mindset that we've been brought up in and the construct that we've been brought up in, it has taught us that we're to bind devils. But the word bind in our language and the word bind as it's been translated here based on the Hebrew word has nothing to do with putting No, it has nothing to do with that. It talks about something coming into contractual agreement. I know we're only looking at it from the point of tying something up or constricting something. The constricting that we're looking at right here is the fact that you have contracted your soul. You've constricted yourself to keep the commitment. But it also, again, denotes that there is a contractual agreement. So when you bind the devil, you're making contractual agreement with him. Are you hearing what I'm saying? You cannot bind and loose devils, which is why it's very important to study to show yourself approved. So only two things should be done. I want you to make this note. I say this all of the time, and I'll say it again. Only two things should be done regarding the adversary, and that's casting him out and resisting him. We cast devils out, and we resist the devil. But we have to first submit to God first, submit to Yah. Then we can resist, and then he will flee. So that's the order of that. I wanted to make sure that you understand that. This word bind also discusses an obligation to take prisoner, to tie, to harness. And I know that's the part that people are thinking about when they start binding devils. But again, that deals with a contractual agreement, a binding to an agreement. Not binding as in just tying alone, but a binding as in coming into an agreement. Okay, so let's talk about the dynamics of a woman being under the father's care. I just kind of briefly talked about that, a husband's care and a father's care, but she goes from the father's care to her husband's care, and it's the same spiritual pattern and same spiritual dynamic, and we talk about that all the time in 1 Corinthians 7:20. First priority, let every man abide in the same calling wherein he was called. But the woman goes from a virgin to a wife, and she's supposed to abide in the calling that she's been called to. So if she's single, she's supposed to remain single until she is found of her husband. When she is found, then she goes into her married life, but not looking and seeking and trying to figure out, when am I going to get married? When is this thing going to happen for me? Okay? So I want to talk about the carefulness of covenant for men and women. If we follow the principles that are laid out here in chapter 30 and beyond, if we follow these principles, then we'll maintain the boundaries, and it prevents vows that bind the soul, because a vow, again, is a binding to our soul. But if we keep the principles that are written, then there will not be a negative binding. There will only be a positive. There will be an innocence in the contract, a testifying of innocence on our part. You understand what I'm saying? So we have to maintain those boundaries, and it prevents vows that afflict our soul. Are you listening to what I'm saying? When we look at verse 32 in this chapter of chapter 30, I love this. It says, but would not have you without carefulness. That's verse 32 of 1 Corinthians chapter 7. Go there. It says, but would not have you without carefulness. He that is unmarried careth for the things of God, how he might please God. That goes for he and she. Okay. And verse 33 and 35 are key. So I'm going to turn there really quickly. I'm telling y'all, we don't have a whole lot of time, and I believe that the Father has done this purposefully, and I'm okay with it, because I'm going to do what I got to do and be where I'm supposed to be, and I'm praying that you're going to do the same. But the reality of the situation is, if you want more of what God has offered in this season, it's going to take your covenant to get it done. That's that. It's going to take your covenant to get it done. So he's, again, setting boundaries. We're talking about boundaries. It says, but he that is unmarried, verse 33 of chapter 7 in 1 Corinthians, but he that is unmarried careth for the things that are of the world, how he may please his wife. Okay? This is the difference. There's also a difference between a wife and a virgin. The unmarried woman cares for the things of Yah, that she may be holy, both in body and in spirit. Oh my God, who teaches this, both in body and in spirit? But she that is married cares for the things of the world, how she may please her husband. And I love this particular part here. If you ingrain this in your heart and in your mind, this thing will do you some profit. It says, and this I speak for your own profit. You hear me? This is for your profit. This is so that you can gain, so that it'll be profitable for you, so that it'll be beneficial. And at that end, at the end of that verse 35, it says, attend upon Yah without distraction, that ye may attend upon him, that you might be his servant, that you might serve him, that you might wait on him. We talk about attendance and service all the time. Think about a waiter. You know, you're serving the table, you're waiting on them, but you're not just sitting around. That's not what wait means. It means that you're attending to their needs, whatever it is that they need, you're supplying that, and you're doing it in excellence, with a good attitude, in good faith, doing it as unto the Lord, okay? So when we talk about the word soul, that's the word nefesh. It means activity of the mind, the seat of appetites, the seat of emotions, and passions, the activity of the mind, the will, and the character, which is the emotions of a person, okay? And we're still just in chapter 30, and we only got 10 minutes. How about that? We're going to see how far we can get. Y'all pray for me, all right? Pray for me. We're going to get through here as best I can. Chapter 31. Let's get to chapter 31. That word avenge in chapter 31, it starts out with avenge. And Yah spake unto Moshe and said, avenge the children of Israel of the Midianites. Now, you remember the Midianites. They were the ones where King Balak, he was dealing with bringing some people together to try to curse Israel. And that whole thing with Baal Peor came up, how they began to lure the people of God into seduce them into these services to Baal Peor, which is the Lord of the gap, the Lord of the opening, the Lord of the hole, the vagina. And so the men were to bow down before the vagina. So yes, that is against God's law. If you just had to ask the question, I had to answer before I get off of here. Absolutely. It is service to Baal Peor. It comes out of a pagan worship and it has a purpose. And when you bow down before that cleft, that hole, that opening, you are serving Baal Peor. End of discussion. So this word avenge discusses the revenge, to punish, to bring on behalf of Yah. And we saw that with Phinehas in chapters before. He was our example, how Phinehas rose up in the anger of God, in the jealousy of God, to avenge God and to stop the plague in Israel. When we look at this word Midianite, it means the word strife. Okay, and there were five kings. And I want to give you the information about the five kings. The first king was Evi, and that was my desire. Evi, it means my desire. Rechem meant variegation, which is a difference or a mixing of colors, a woven, something that is woven of various sorts. The word Zer is another king, and we saw Zer the other day because he was actually the father of Cosbi, which was the woman who died in that whole stopping of the plague at the hands of Phinehas. And that word Zer means rock. It means a fortified one, an adversary that is fortified. The word Hur is another king, prince of that of the Midianites, and that means whole. Reba or Reva is four. It means four parts or four sides. So those were the five kings of Midian that were brought to a low place, okay? And Moshe was to do a certain thing a certain way, bring them against the Midianites. And we note here in these situations that they were to go to war. They sent Moshe sent them to war, 1,000 of every tribe. So that would have been 12,000. I want to read verse 6 to you. It says, and Moshe sent them to the war, 1,000 of every tribe, them and Phinehas, the son of Eleazar the priest. You remember Phinehas was the one that stopped the plague, to the war with holy instruments and the trumpets to blow in his hand. So they had music and war. I mean, they had the devices for their warfare, and they have music. This is the combination for strategy in that season, and this is the combination for strategy that we're dealing with now. When you look all the way down to verse 9, it begins to deal with Israel to all the women. It starts dealing with who they begin to capture. And it says in verse 9, and the children of Israel took all the women of Midian captive, the little ones, and took the spoil of all their cattle and all their flocks and all their goods. I want you to look here and see that there's a process here. I want you to look verse 10, it says they burnt the cities, another part of strategy of warfare. In verse 11, it says they got the spoils. Okay, they brought the spoils, the captives and the prey and the spoil. And they brought it before the leader. They brought it before Moshe and Eleazar the priest and unto the congregation of the children of Israel. But I want you to make a note here that they brought the captives and all of that as well as the spoil. But there was something very special to me that was stated here. In verse 13, it says that Moshe and Eleazar and all the princes of the congregation went forth, but they met them outside of the camp. This is important because they met them without the camp, because this is a key, because they weren't quick to bring something from outside into their culture, into the establishment of what God had given them. And this is important because this is the way that Adam failed in the garden with his dominion and his authority. He was quick to allow something else in the environment, quick to allow something else to contaminate the culture that was set up and established between him and his father. So there's a remembrance that takes place in verse 14 through 17. Moses was wroth. He was pissed off with the officers of the host. And what he wants to remind them of, he says, listen, aren't these the same people that caused you guys to commit trespass against the Lord in the matter of Baal Peor when the plague came among the congregations? He says in verse 17, now therefore kill every male among the little ones and kill every woman that hath known man by lying with him. Now he has to go back through here and bring them to the realization. You need to remember what happened here. These people caused you to fail. They caused death amongst your people. So now you need to, there needs to be some more death that happens here. There needs to be some more separation. So you're going to need to deal with this thing as I am commanding you. We see in several verses down that there's a division of the booty. And I'm commanding you to read that now. You can read that in your own time, but you'll notice that there's a division there. They have to separate things by lot, and they divide it into two parts. So read that. Let's go to chapter 30, 32. Chapter 32, the tribes of Gad, Reuben, and Manasseh. I've preached this so many times before. They are, this is before they get on the other side of the Jordan, and Reuben and Gad, they're having a conversation. They're looking at the cattle that they have. They're looking at their situation, and they're looking at the land that they're in before they cross over, and they want to establish themselves in this land. They don't want to cross over. So I want you to go all the way to verse 5. Because this is important, because there's something that happens here. It says, wherefore said they, if we have found grace in thy sight, let this land be given unto thy servants for a possession, and bring us not over Jordan. Now, this is what the Father was commanding, that they go over Jordan and possess the land. And Moses said unto the children of Gad and to the children of Reuben, shall your brethren go to war, and shall ye sit here? In other words, this is not going to happen this way. This is not how this is supposed to work. We're supposed to be a unified front. This is important. This is leadership 101. This is a fellowship of the body, Ecclesia 101, unified front. And I'm going to preach this on Facebook. I believe this is a series that he's commanded me to preach in this season. So if you haven't joined me, join me there. The power of one. We did the power of three last year, and I'm still on the power of three. Power of one is still three, but you understand what I'm saying. But at the end of the day, the power of one, a unified front. He says, and wherefore discourage ye the heart of the children of Israel from going over into the land which the Lord hath given them. Thus did your fathers when I sent them from Kadesh Barnea to see the land. He's referring back to the fact that this happened before when we were right there, and I sent them out to spy out the land. They went out to spy out the land. They brought back this negative report and prevented the people from going into the land. And you will note in verse 15, it says, if ye turn away from after him, he will yet again lead them in the wilderness, and ye shall destroy all this people. Are you hearing what I'm saying? These are leadership 101 points. This verse 7, it says, wherefore discourage ye the heart of the children of Israel from going over. This is also the spirit of Diotrephes. You'll notice that. I talked about that before. I want you to look up Diotrephes. He's in the New Testament. I'm not going to give you where it is. I want you to look it up. Diotrephes, Diotrephes, I believe, Diotrephes. Look it up. I want you to look that up. And the Father's anger was kindled against those that kept and prevented them from going over into the land. But I want you to remember that we also have false leadership that is shown in Matthew 23 and Matthew 11:52. Same dynamic. That's the reference there. And you'll see that the Bible is declaring to the Pharisees and to the religious people of the day that you don't go in and you prevent others from obtaining the promise as well. You block them from the promise. You don't want to go in, and you block them from going into the promise as well. Chapter 33. Let's go to chapter 33. I want you to see the dynamics there. And look at verse 23 in chapter 32, because it says, but if you will not do so, behold, ye have sinned against Yah. And this goes back to that whole keeping the covenant thing. If you break the covenant, that's a sin. Okay? And so they make covenant there. And Moses also puts in place what he needs to put in place, because he is going to go away to his fathers. He's going to go to the place of rest. Okay? And you'll see that in chapter 31, verse 2, where the Father's telling him what to do before he goes to the place of rest. Verse 29 shows you the power of unity again. Okay? It says, and Moses said unto them, if the children of Gad and the children of Reuben will pass with you, that's unity. Every man armed to battle before Yah, and the land shall be subdued before you. Then you shall give the land of Gilead to them for possession. We've only got a couple of seconds left. Genesis chapter 33. That talks about the journey, so I'm ordering you to read that as well. Verses 50 through 52 is what I want to deal with, the instructions once in the land. This is important. And we've got 90 seconds. This is important. I want you to go back and reference the word that I gave yesterday on last night's broadcast, the prophetic word, but we're coming in here. It's important that when you get in the land, you know what to do. You know what to do. Listen, until the next time we come together, I want you to know that you're blessed. And don't forget, if you haven't joined me on Facebook and Twitter and all those places, at Apostle Crystal Lee is how you find me. If you need to get in touch with me, it's kingdomambassadors247@gmail.com. Read the word and be fed today. I love you so much. God bless you.